Okay. Ready, Nigel?
Yes, go ahead, Dan.
Okay. So I've been doing a number of different experiments with XTDB, and using mostly I started out by using the lab charts and just doing some of the work within the lab environment. And there were some interesting little surprises that in retrospect should have been obvious. Clearly in the way the lab charts work for most of the repositories, it's just transparent where how the persistence is working. And Nigel somewhat recently added, I don't remember exactly when it was, Nigel, an XTDB in-memory option in the lab chart for configuration. And so I started with that. But the then I quickly wanted to move on to the different XTDB options, and there's a lot of different permutations that you can do with XTDB. And I just was exploring what you could do. In particular, I was interested in getting it to work with Postgres, which I did. But along the way, I was very much reminded that every unique metadata access server has to have its own storage. And by default, on the way that the containers are set up originally, if I was using the in-memory or even some of the key value store approaches for XDDB, it was using the same files in the same directory. It wasn't creating a new one in the container for every server that was started on that platform. And so that caused me some confusion for a little bit until I realized what was going on. And there's some discussion of that in the in GitHub. Got that sorted out, and then I changed what the configuration was, and also Chris, I think, did some changes in XTDB so that the configurations were per server rather than per platform. So that was going on. And along the way, it created. Yep.
Double check. Was this the case only for XDB, Dan, or
No. It
because I
was
remember
generally true.
when
Yeah.
when for JanusGraph we actually isolate this because it's just a if you use embedded JanusGraph, if you use just an example with JanusGraph, sorry to jump in there, but you actually specify where is the home folder in the configuration of the repository, like the logical repository. So you can, in theory, just specify different folders per server because it's a server configuration. So are we talking about the same thing or it's something different than that?
Well, also to jump in on the graph repository, for example, I mean, all the configuration by default for Jira, it's put under data, and then there's a platforms directory and a servers directory.
Yeah.
And so a long time ago, when because we had this problem actually years ago with graph, and at that time, that's why we made this new structure. So under servers, that's where you'll find the Janus graph repository for the metadata store. So it uses that server element within the path. I think there was some concern that for some of the files, XTDB wasn't. But I wouldn't have thought those other repositories are affected. I thought they are now correct.
So certainly, Lupcho, you're correct that you can specify it explicitly, and that is what I'm doing. And I'll show you how I did that. And I wrote a little function for myself, at least, just to, or, and then there's more to do, just to build the configuration string in the right way, passing in the server name as the parameter, and then building the right structure. But the default for when you created the standard, I think, in-memory version of XDDB, it ended up with one directory per platform. So there was an XDDB directory created, but it wasn't under a server name.
Okay.
It was per platform.
Clear. And this it was done in the chart, because the chart is configuring, right? The Helm chart.
Yes, that's right. Or it was done during startup from the XDDB connector itself.
Okay.
And the thing is that, you know, obviously when you're running those charts, the platform hosts multiple servers. So the issue here is that that platform can host multiple servers wasn't respected in the way the XDDB connector was managing its files.
Yeah, might be the connector. Yeah.
Now, I do want to get back to Janus Graph, Lupcho, because I want to learn how you do some of your stuff there, because one of our clients wants to use Janus Graph with HBase, which is another whole discussion, I think. Anyway, so was looking at the different options, and you know, we can take a look at some of the different configurations that you have. Just close some of these down. For XDDB, and there are a lot of choices, right? So there's XDDB itself has multiple backend repositories that you set up. For a lot of the repositories, like for Janus Graph, you set up one for your storage and you set up another one for your index, basically, whether it's Lucene or Elasticsearch. In Janus Graph, you set up one for your transaction log, one for your document store, and then you can have one or more for query indices and search. And so there's a bunch of them, as we'll see. From the supported storage mechanism, there again are quite a number of choices. We can pop over to their website, and you know, you can see they support a bunch of different things for storage. But if we go and we look at these, they'll say AWS S3, that's fine, but it's for what they call a document store. And if we look at, let's say JDBC, you can use it for transaction and or document store.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at Kafka, actually, which seems to be one of the more popular ones, by the way, it can be used as index or document store, but really as transaction or document store, but they're really recommending it for more transaction store than and using something else for your document store. So there's a number of options, and you kind of have to sort through which ones make sense for you. So, and then on the JDBC side, they support quite a number of different backends. So H2, MySQL, SQL Server, Oracle, Postgres, and SQLite. Okay. So a lot of options there. So if we look at the default, how you specify some of the configurations, this is what the default configuration looks like for the in-memory. Basically, you don't specify very much. You just give it the class name. Okay, and that's the default one. And so if you said in the lab environment, you said XDDB dash in-memory, this is what gets created. If we look at the key value store, this one is Now, there's two ways to represent the configuration string to XDDB. One is with a JSON, which was what we're kind of used to, and the other is called an EDN string, which is kind of equivalent to the JSON, but no squiggly braces, and spacing is important. And it seems to be more prevalent in the language environment that XDDB is, which is Clojure. Anyway, so this is the configuration for the KV store, default configuration. And you can see that you specify a scene for it. And again, we can control where it goes. And you can see that here, I just inject the server name in this particular one. You put in where the KV, the index store is, right over here. This is the key value store. So this is RocksDB. Give it a document store. Again, RocksDB. And a transaction log, which again is RocksDB. And so you specify all those things, and then you're off. If we look at the way Postgres works, now when we do Postgres, and again, I haven't done exhaustive all the permutations, but this is an EDN string. Now, the reason it's an EDN string here rather than a JSON is, for whatever reason, and this was several weeks ago, I couldn't make the JSON work. but I could make the EDN flavor of it work. And chatting with Chris, he also didn't have luck getting the JSON to work with Postgres. And so on our Egeria documentation, it switches over to using EDN for Postgres. And there's some other rules that Chris discovered. He did a great job on a lot of the stuff. Anyway, so we specify an index store, and that's still using RocksDB. And this is a transient store for that, and then Lucene. And then Chris also wrote a special little indexer to automatically construct the Lucene index for Egeria for this environment. Not just for Postgres, but in general for XDDB, and a little analyzer module. And then to do the JDBC, the way it's usually done is you create a connection pool. And this is, again, using another open source project for creating connection pools. And in this particular case, I put in my raw SQL string in here. So ultimately, we need to figure out how to put in the secrets connector in here too, the new secrets connector. And I wrote a little helper function around this. And then specify transaction log. We use this connection pool in the transaction log and then in the document store. And the other little tricky thing that Chris discovered, which I also found to be true, is that when you do this, you have to define your indices and other things up front and your Postgres stuff in the back and at the end of your configuration. So there's some sensitivity in the ordering. And so that works okay. Then we can look at what Chris came up with for his HA topology, which is also in the documentation. And sorry, it's a little hard to read. This is actually one long string in EDN. And so that's one of the reasons that I've started to create helper functions to construct this that then are more readable. Anyway. So this is what it's doing is it's using in Chris's string, we're putting in we're using a combination of Postgres for the document store, and he's using Kafka as the transaction store. And then using the HA capabilities of both Postgres and Kafka to harden the back end. Okay. And then you can also do mixtures of this stuff. And so in this particular one, or other mixtures. So in this particular one, using again Postgres in here for the document store, and I'm using the key value store for the index, for the transaction log, as well as the index. And every one of these combinations have different performance implications, both for ingest and write. And no doubt they also will have significant concurrency implications as well. So let me pause there. Any questions around that?
Can you please again show just the HA, first HA config for Egeria? I didn't spot it. So here I see that RocksDB is still used as key value. That's indexing, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the local file system, because RocksDB is a storage and local file system. And then it was the Kafka for, I guess, the log, transaction log.
That's right, yes.
And then there's the document store, which relies on
Postgres.
Postgres. Okay. Yeah. So.
And the. Sorry, go ahead.
No, just trying to understand. There is still this need of putting the index store. What are the other options? Because you have the mixture as well. What would you say is the other option to export the index store to a service similar to Kafka, or distributed service similar to Kafka, or?
So yeah. So the thing, and in my view, the XDB documentation isn't great in this area, but the index store and the search index are viewed as transient stores, and that can be rebuilt from what they call the golden stores. And the golden stores are the transaction log and the document store.
Okay.
And so they're more viewed as ephemeral, and they're there for performance and caching, basically.
Okay.
I think it does bring up, it brings that one question in an HA environment where you've got multiple, you know, replicas of this metadata repository, which is that, what does it mean for that to be in a good state, to be ready to take requests? Because what happens whilst that index is being rebuilt? Does it just mean it's slower? Does it return wrong results? Because you could end up with different replicas of a server returning different results because one of the servers is still rebuilding the index. And I don't know. That's an issue we may have to explore later.
Yeah. So the way the HA works here, just to deviate a little bit, is that you can see that here's the two golden stores. One is the EDB is Postgres, and this is Kafka. Mm-hmm. And this is how you configure it, and this is where XDB is. And we get down into the runtime part for a second, you can see that each one of these has their own index store. And from an HA point of view, the requests are coming in at the top and they're getting sprayed across your different nodes. If one of the nodes goes down, then it's obviously going to be taken out of that and operation will continue. And when this comes back up, its index would be recreated as part of its coming back up.
And that's my point, which is it's the digging into coming back up. Because in the HA environment, what you would probably want is not to have that pod in the ready state. In other words, it responding to user requests. until that index build.
That's right.
Complete. And maybe that's what happens. I don't know.
I think that's what happens. Yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't completely come up until the index is rebuilt.
Probably, yeah. It's right. Part of the startup sequence. Then it makes sense. Otherwise, it cannot guarantee performance, I guess.
That's right.
Well, otherwise, the risk is that you get inconsistent results because your requests could go to different nodes.
Or you get slower time without the index being there.
Spoiler. Yeah, that's right. If the results are, if it's only performance, it's less of a concern. It's a minor concern. But if it's incorrect results, then it's a bigger concern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that this wouldn't come up, or you would not allow this to be turned on until this was brought back up.
Yeah, that's the important bit.
Yep. And of course, you know, Chris is, we're not doing anything special here. This Kafka is just designed to be HA. And similarly for this version of Postgres, it's being used in a way that is just HA. I mean, it's an HA version. So there's nothing special about that we have to do about these. This is where the magic happens.
Yeah, I think when I looked at doing a Postgres cluster with the crunchy data operator, you ended up it wasn't concurrent use. It was pretty much a failover kind of environment where the master node got switched around based on the state of the different members of the cluster. But as you say, that's a Postgres thing. It's not really a prime concern.
Yeah, so this is using a version called EDB, and EDB has this characteristics in the way that they're one of the companies that basically sell a commercialized Postgres. That's for enterprise use.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so that's what happens during outages. So, I mean, Chris did a really good job at this. I mean, it's really, really quite nice.
And I think this now, based on my kind of in-house experience here, this can work in environments. Now I'm thinking again with building materials we have here. The thing that was not clear, that's why I asked how we can scale or export basically the indexing service, not to be embedded state in the containers, but if you, as you explained it, if it's inferral storage and the rebuilding part is not too expensive for the application itself, so it happens, as Nigel said, it keeps it consistent by creating it on startup. If all that is happening, then I think we can still consider this to be production ready setup, I would say. I mean, not only on paper here, because for Kafka and the other one, we don't have a lot of options for Postgres, but you mentioned commercial vendors are there. So Kafka, for sure, we already have it with Confluent.
Yeah, and it could be Oracle in the back end, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So if it can be Oracle cluster as well for us,
probably it's easier. It could be
The only question for me still, even if the indexing state is rebuilt from this golden stores, what is the kind of the cost there? Is it really putting a lot of read-write operation on, because it's still file system there? That is the only concern I have in my head, because it's not in memory, right? It's still file-based.
It could be in, I mean, that's right. That starts to get a little hazier when we get into SSD, but yes.
I'm inspired. Don't get me wrong. I'm inspired with constraints we have in the organization. That's also always don't use, even for this short-term caching, try not to use IO operations here against this.
Yeah. And it's certainly worth an experiment to try using a remoted one of these, you know, that might be a separate node in the cluster, or maybe a very fast access to a service here.
Yeah.
But I would think that the performance characteristics that you're looking for here are different from the performance characteristics that you're looking for one of the golden stores.
Yeah, right? I think that's by design there to be embedded as a function.
Yeah.
Whether you put it on the file system or maybe ideally on a in memory, so you really increase the memory resources on those pods where they can do something in memory. And then it's critical not to have remoting there, I think, if it's indexed, because okay, for Janus Graph is slightly different. We have Elasticsearch for this responsible. Still not a performance impact, I think, but it is remoted, this part. So I'm just thinking out loud.
Absolutely. I've been doing the same kind of thinking, exactly. I mean, that's one of the reasons for this set of experiments is to start to characterize the environment and understand what knobs do we have and which ones do you want to turn.
Exactly.
The other thing here is that if this is, even if this is local and getting to Nigel's original point, it might mean then instead of having three instances here, you might have five, right? In other words, if it takes a while to rebuild one of these, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you don't necessarily want to be down to two available pods. You might want to still have three or four, right? So that length of time might actually end up dictating, you know, the time to recover the full configuration might dictate how many instances you run.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that getting that number right is something you could automate as well, because, you know, you can monitor those statuses. So you can let it go over whilst the rebuild, and then you can scale back down. So I can see there's lots of potential. As long as that architecture is right, you've got lots of ability to add extra management of it.
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing here is that the spraying is being done by an XTDB service up here. And we might want to think about, is there a more general sprayer that we want to use? Is there a more standard approach to do it? Because I don't know that XTDB actually needs to be up here, really.
Well, in a Kubernetes environment, that would be just a normal Kubernetes service does that. And there's various different kinds of service with different characteristics and implementations about how to rotate. It's all based on sort of pattern matching criteria as to where you route requests and availability and things like that.
Right. And that was kind of my point, Nigel, is that this architecture doesn't presuppose Kubernetes, and we might make adjustments to it if we did presuppose Kubernetes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I would agree. I think that there, you know, what you do in terms of load balancing and request routing at maybe various levels is kind of external then to the services, which primarily are towards the fronter end, shall we say, Egeria itself. And then XTDB is very much the, you know, the back end repositories that the Egeria services are using.
Right. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. I think there's some more discussion there as well as we start to think this through.
So I still have one maybe question, if you allow me.
Please.
Please, if you can open the same picture. I'm a bit not clear in one aspect of this. So on the left side, we have the pods that run some Mux server, right? With the platform or multiple servers, doesn't matter, one logical for me unit. Then that one does remoting to the service, right? The XTDB, which runs N pods or can be scaled, right? The XTDB 1, 2, 3 is basically headless port from what I see. And it exposed to a server. And now talking in terms of Kubernetes, it really doesn't matter if it's Kubernetes or not, but what is that type of application running in that pod, the XTDB 0.2x?
That is one metadata server. That's one metadata access server.
So, and on the left, what is then?
This one is just a separate one that's used to drive the, so if we go back up, this is the startup. And so waiting for the three OMAG servers, for the three platforms to come up. And then this guy starts up and he's driving the configuration of these.
Okay. The actual capability metadata servers are the dedicated ones?
They're all here. Yeah, they're just here.
And the first one, that was what I was confused with. Basically, the first one is just a configuration dedicated to the platform. Fine.
Exactly.
That answered my question then.
Yeah. And then I would assume that when you have an outage, in fact, you can see it here, then this guy also is going to reset the failed node.
Yeah, it depends on how it is implemented, so because it can be automated as well. But it depends really. Because then you, if this is Kubernetes, then we apply it at the platform on the left side, can be maybe OMAC platform, but also can be maybe the Kubernetes platform, which
I think one of the inhibitors there is what the cloud native work group has been talking about in terms of the whole concept of platform. Kind of gets in the way a bit of what Kubernetes would do alongside our servers, because you need to be able to declare what these configurations are, and they need to sort themselves out basically, rather than having some external application that's doing it. So if you do need that, and when you want to add that behavior, that's where things like operators come in, and that would be a more sort of cloud native solution for this. Shouldn't rely on this external thing, other than for driving tests, which of course is what it's primarily was put there for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but it's conceptually clear for me now.
Yeah, and I think I might need to get a little more involved in the cloud native stuff to understand what's going on. As I work with other users, I think it's going to come up more, different options. Okay, so that was Postgres, KV stores, mixtures. So those are just some of the different configurations. For XTDB, clearly the EDN configuration is more reliable than JSON. I mentioned a little bit of
For human, also for me at least, I don't know the format, the convention. It's a bit unreadable, maybe because I don't know it.
It in the beginning, it's very much
especially
unreadable.
If you put it in one line.
If you get used to it, let's put it that way. And I spent a lot of time staring at it.
You get used
so
to
it. I started.
The pain in life, I guess.
Yeah. See, this is an example. I'm just on the Kafka one. This is what the snippet looks like in EDN.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the same snippet looks like in Kafka.
JSON, yeah.
JSON, I mean, yeah.
It's basically somewhere between YAML and JSON.
Yeah, exactly.
Both of which are lovely.
Yeah.
I mean,
can you imagine?
So I completely agree with you, Lupcho. I mean, this initially drove me nuts because I was, comfortable with this. I was not at all comfortable with this in the beginning.
It's semantics.
Kind of got there.
Yeah. It doesn't matter at the end. We get used to it.
Okay.
But you had a point. It's more reliable, but
it's more reliable. So actually, if we go back over here, so if we look at like this JSON, or let me look at it for this one, that JSON was not parsing properly for me for some reason. It's been many weeks ago now, but I was just having trouble getting this JSON picked up, but when I did the equivalent EDN, I didn't have a problem.
Yeah, maybe the embedding in the quotation as well as brackets.
But you're on a good point there, which is as I wrote this with some little helper functions, just getting the right quotations injected and the right brackets injected isn't always easy to do with some of this stuff. It could just be a little tricky just to construct the right strings to generate because of all the special characters. So that was this one. So what are some of the configuration? So this is this actually is an example of the configuration, one of the configuration helpers that I wrote. And what this one does is it, you pass in the server name and a URL that describes your database connection. So it's the URL of the database with the embedded name and password in it. And then you can generate that. And this will just construct the right body for you and return the body that you can then inject into in the configuration command of Egeria. So basically that's just how I
configured.
Build the configuration string. I will say, and again, this is probably a super obvious point, but it wasn't the most obvious one to me on day one. You have to have a separate database for every metadata server if you're doing Postgres. So it's not a separate table, it's a separate database. And apparently there is a way to set it up so it could be at least a separate schema within a database. I didn't explore that, but that might be worth exploring.
Yeah, it might become important because, again, inspired by what we do here, you get a database as a service, and that means that it may cost you to get more instances, and if you can share instances with multiple schemas, probably it will be better. So just practical reasons.
Yes. So it's, I mean, I would have preferred if it was a separate table or set of tables, but anyway. Okay, now a little bit of some of the fun stuff. So I've started to do some performance experiments. I'll show you the more recent ones. These are a little bit out of date now. And so one of the, again, for this other customer, and they're initially using the first deployment of Egeria is around the business glossary. And so they wanted to demonstrate over 100,000 terms in the glossary. And terms themselves are complex objects with classifications, not just an array of attributes that you inject. So there's more than just a simple insert in. And again, just, oops, come on. Not increasing. I don't know if you can read it or not.
I think it's fine.
Not getting here. Okay. So just comparing some things, and there were a number of different ways of doing it in sizes. So this is just injecting the SIM archive that we've all, that's been part of the labs for a while. And you can see that Janus Graph with the default Berkeley DB takes roughly 280 seconds to load it. XDDB with Postgres, 405. XDDB with a key value store, 36. XDDB with that mixed configuration of key value store in Postgres was 292 and so forth. And so you can see there's a very wide difference in performance that you start to see. And it ranges here, it's about 0.47 seconds per term, basically. Whereas here with, actually this is wrong, should be different. Anyway, I think that number's wrong. Let me actually look at, okay, ignore the graph, but this is some of the latest numbers I was capturing. Okay, so this is 0.47, 0.68. And so you can see very significant differences in performance here. And this is just for the samples. The simplest thing, which is loading in from an archive. Just loading in 102 terms, you can see 77 seconds there. Postgres, very close, but XDB, KV, and MX, much faster. If we go and look all the way down at loading 20,000 terms, it's very close now between Janus Graph and XDDB Postgres still. And the local optimized key stores are much faster. The standard XDDB in memory is 2380 versus 17 or 617 roughly here. Mm-hmm. So you can see very big differences here. Then I started to run set of experiments around query. And again, Janus Graph for scanning 20,000 terms, you know, 57 seconds, well, Postgres, it was much bigger. It was 124, 125. XDDB key value store, 296. So massive orders of magnitude difference there. Once you start to look at particular searching, that's just a scan, searching, and you can start to see XDDB with full Postgres starting to do better than in-memory and XDDB key value, which is kind of expected, right? Because this is well indexed. So anyway, just starting to explore the performance ramifications of the different choices. And not really in a, I mean, literally just on a laptop. So this is not real performance experiments, but it's giving us just some feeling of what's going on.
It's good enough indication, I would say.
It says what things are worth testing further. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But as with any time we do performance work, as everybody knows, coming up with the right workloads is critical. And you know, I haven't really wrapped my head fully around PTS yet, but this is much closer to what I would call scenario testing, where it's what we would see users wanting to do, right, within their applications. Not necessarily scanning 20,000, that's not a great idea, but certainly wildcard searches, and then I'll add more complicated searches as well. And that starts to, that's, my guess is that the more complicated the search, the more having a real database in the back end is going to start to help, rather than just having a simple index. You know, because we'll start to have more flavors of query optimization, hopefully. Maybe not, because at the end of the day, right now, XDDB is just creating a single table and mixing everything in there. So depending on how they index that, it's your performance will vary a lot. But that also would indicate where it's going to be worth spending more time with XDDB or anything else. I mean, it could be Janus Graph that we spend more time with, doesn't matter, but where we would want to try to optimize. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So then started last week to spend a bit of time with Janus Graph. And started to look at HBase as the back end, because that's what this client wants to do. And haven't gotten as far along here as I'd like. I mean, there's a lot of sensitivity on versions with HBase and HBase on Elasticsearch. Actually do have a version of the right version of HBase running. So with the version of Janus Graph that we currently ship, which is 0.62, it has to be HBase 2.27 is what they test with. And then there's particular versions of Elasticsearch as well. So I've been able to get this to work standalone, the Janus Graph and HBase, but not connected to Egeria yet.
What sort of issues did you find, or is it just that you're just starting to do that?
Well, it was actually hard to figure out. And so Mandy actually has put in a few more diagnostic methods into the starting of a repository to help me. And there were some exceptions missing. So in the beginning, I would just get a 500 error out. And effectively, it would just hang starting up one of the metadata access servers. Or it would give a 500 error out with no explanation. And so I see a variety of things where either it couldn't access the HBase, even though it's the same one that I'm getting to from JanusGraph directly, standalone. So just a lot of little things, probably. But and also getting the right combinations of additional jar files that are needed to make this work. So it's not just, you know, you throw in the JanusGraph-HBase and hope it's going to work. It's now you have to go figure out, are all the dependencies met under here, and then which flavors of what dependencies. And it's a bit of a dependency nightmare just trying to, I mean, experiment with what's the right combination.
And the thing with the dependencies as well is that the way things are currently set up, all of these classes end up being on the class path. So the potential for conflicts, i.e. you add something to get HBase to work, but in the process that breaks something in Nigeria, is quite significant. So, you know, we saw some of this when David was doing work with Hadoop as well, and we ended up with a more complex build with exclusions and stuff, but we got stuff working. But I think an isolated class loader is something that could help here. Issue open, code hasn't been done. The other question is, are you talking about HBase locally here? Because obviously the metadata repository has not been developed to support remote graph.
Well, so the JanusGraph is local, right? It's the embedded JanusGraph within Nigeria. But it's talking to an HBase that is on a different machine.
And do we think that should work okay?
No, this
I
is...
don't. That should be similar to kind of what Lupcho does with Sandra.
Yes, so it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. By design, of course, you can mix and match what you do with JanusGraph. Basically, you have this default option to embed it in process of Java and then have remoting to a storage. That's what this does, right? So it's running JanusGraph, basically Gremlin code and all of the stuff that is graph related processing is embedded into the process, into the Java process. And then persistence calls are remoted to a store that can be HBase. We are using Cassandra. It's basically a remote database connection from a Java application. And then you have the fully scalable solution, which is recommended production deployment scenario, where you actually export the runtime for JanusGraph on a separate server, dedicated JVM, which then does the same, basically, does a remote to a store. But you are then doing another hop of remoting from a Java application with a client to a Janus server. And this helps with scaling, but it has impact on performance because you do extra hop remoting.
And also transaction management.
Yeah. For
the repository server, I think you got your own implementation for Lineage.
But we did this, indeed. We did this transaction management. Basically, it is as simple as every Gremlin query is single transaction as compared to a embedded one where you bundle a lot of things because you're in process and you can do multiple commits and stuff like that. But we have it for Open Lineage and we tested it, but it was huge. Refactoring to do the same for local graph.
Yeah, and that's the issue. We don't have it in the repository server. But given, since Dan is running JanusGraph locally here with each Egeria server, we don't have that problem per se, as long as JanusGraph, multiple instances of JanusGraph can correctly write to HBase. Because aren't you going to, aren't you going to end up here, Dan? Ultimately, you want an HA type solution, don't you? And if you were to want multiple active concurrent nodes, you can't do that with Janus Graph as we have it today because of this limitation in the connector. Is that right? Or
why? I
don't know enough about Janus Graph and the architecture. Does Janus Graph work fully with a single instance that's stored on HBase running Janus Graph locally on each replica? Is that topology something we know should work in Janus Graph?
So, I want to say yes right away. The thing is that we indeed deployed it like this, and I think we still have this set up on acceptance, where we have two instances in two data centers, two metadata access servers, hosting or embedding Janus Graph and exporting the state to a common Cassandra key space, being the storage. And so far, we haven't done really extensive testing from, but we do also configure, so we don't use both instances in an active mode. We have this active passive setup. Okay. Basically, we guarantee with some HA configuration upfront that only the writes, for example, in a certain amount of time will go through a one or the other instance. So that's how. But logical, to answer your question, Nigel, on a logical error, there was no issue whatsoever. Embedded Janus Graph from two applications using the same storage, if that was the question.
That was the question, yes. Whether the single shared graph storage backend.
Yeah, that's how we had it deployed on acceptance and production as well. But production now is a little bit on hold because.
But you didn't have concurrent. You didn't have an active.
Exactly. We never. That's what I say. We are kind of isolating maybe concurrency issues here by not allowing concurrent requests to go through both instances. And again, this was because we never had this completely tested, and it was kind of a safeguard for ourselves as well. We just did again active passive HA in front. It's controlled by a different component, but still all the requests, basically everything that happens, because it's not a really complex scaled deployment. It's just one metadata repository that was accessed for read and write at one point in time from one instance in one data center, if you will.
So that was just the risk I wanted to bring up, Dan, in terms of, you know, what do we know, what do we don't know, what have we tried about this kind of configuration, and where are you trying to get to?
Yes, I mean, I think that, you know, you bring up some good points, Nigel, and we have to do a lot more experimenting. I would not be surprised if we didn't have to go to the remoted Janus graph at some point and then do the wrapping of transactions.
Once again, I didn't follow this last comment then.
Well, so sorry, what I meant is if you use the Janus Graph server, then you have to address the transaction issue that Nigel also brought up.
Correct. But
there's the intermediate step as well with one configuration that we think works in that Luke chose been working with it, which is the
it's still
passive.
Active passive. That's the thing. We logically have two instances sharing the storage, being ready in a ready state. Indeed, having active connections to the same store, basically same database, open connections. However, we are isolating or decreasing the kind of the probability of something wrong happening there from a concurrency nature by not forcing requests to go through the same both instances because it's still embedded. And I think it's not designed to be run in active state if you really have this embedded on multiple JVMs. That's why you need to go to a server. Then you have a proper scalable HA deployment.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and so that's, I think that's going to take a lot of figuring out to do. Because, I mean, the thing that's most likely to fail is probably not Janus Graph or HBase. It's probably the Egeria server or you know, one of the components around there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to run multiple instances of that, then now you're back into the server land.
Most probably, it can get to a locking situation. So there is a lock mechanism, mm-hmm. which I think it will kick off if you try to do something fishy from two instances sharing.
Okay.
So I think you will end up into locking exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Database locking, sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I would certainly, Loop Joe, be very interested in seeing in general what some of your Janus Graph configurations look like, even though it's with Cassandra, just to see if it gives me any more hints about how to try to fix it with HBase.
It's for us, it's rather simple. I can share it.
Okay, that would be great.
It's just one example. I will just mask the hostname. Yeah. That's you'll get it.
Yeah. So we're near the top of the hour, and I have to get on another call. In fact, we're at the top of the hour. But I think that there's a lot more performance testing to do and more discussion to figure out what kind of performance testing we should do and what we should publish about it, if anything, about different configurations that we test. But maybe next week we should talk about that.
Sure. Let's continue.
Yes. Interesting.
Okay. Does that make sense? Was this helpful? Was it interesting?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. Because it raises the right questions, at least in, as you said, sets the stage for the next important topics to be discussed. So,
yeah. Okay. Thanks, everybody. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.
Thanks, Dan. Bye, everyone.
Bye now.